Health insurers continue to gobble each other up, getting ready for health insurance reform.
And Chinese protesters take to the streets over some islands in the East China Sea. Hello, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith in New York.
And I'm Jeff Horwich in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Midday Update for Monday, August 20th. A little bit later on the podcast, Stacey, have you ever heard of the show Shark Tank? Have you ever watched that on ABC?
I haven't watched it, but I've definitely heard of it.
As Marketplace fans might know, if you're a fan of business news, you might actually like this reality TV show. It is a group of investors who sit up, you know, on a dais in their plush chairs, and they basically judge entrepreneurial ideas and decide whether to invest or not their own money. So we're going to talk with Robert Herjavec, who, as long as that show has been on, he has been the guy on the far right, and he's a very interesting fellow. That's coming up later in the show.
And Los Angeles's mayor is going to Las Vegas. He's there to promote the city's retail business, Made in LA.
Wake up to the day's top business headlines. Subscribe to the Marketplace Morning Report podcast. It's on iTunes and marketplace.org/podcasts.
Aetna is buying another health insurer, Coventry. This is the latest example of a large insurer swallowing up a smaller one to gain its Medicare and Medicaid business. More people are expected to land in those programs once the federal insurance mandate kicks in next year. With more, here's Marketplace's Scott Tong.
Aetna is buying Coventry Healthcare for more than $5.5 billion. That gives Aetna a bigger foothold into the elderly Medicare market, where the government is the main customer instead of private companies. And that is the growth market, says Chaz Rhodes. He's with the advisory board company, a healthcare research firm.
All of the insurers realize that traditional commercial risk business, where they're insuring individuals through employer contracts, is a shrinking business. The population is aging. Over time, 79 million baby boomers are going to age into the Medicare program and leave the commercial roles.
Another big pool of insurance customers is Medicaid recipients. The program for low-income Americans will expand under the health reform law. And Aetna isn't the only busy company. Cigna and WellPoint have just made their own deals to sell more Medicare and Medicaid products. They all assume the future is with the government, and it's here to help. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Clicking over, take a quick look at the markets. Stacey, we had a mixed close over in Asia today. The Nikkei was up 0.8%. In Europe, stocks were down just a bit, and U.S. markets also seem to be beginning the day on a down note. Best Buy stock, especially, share price is down more than 7% so far this morning. And Stacey, that is not the kind of glowing reception you would hope when you announce a new CEO.
No,
Electronics retailer is going outside of its own industry, but poaching from a fellow Minneapolis company, as it turns out. Hubert Joly is a Frenchman who had been running Carlson. It's a hospitality company, if you haven't heard of it, that includes Radisson Hotels and TGI Fridays. He's going to jump over and try to see if he can right the ship at Best Buy. Best Buy stock also may be trending down on news that its former chairman has hit some snags in attempting a stock buyout to take the company back over himself.
And in China over the weekend, activists smashed shop windows and overturned cars in a wave of anti-Japanese protests. The protests center around a couple of uninhabited rocky islands in the East China Sea. Here to explain what's behind this is the BBC's Mariko Oi in Tokyo. Good morning, Mariko.
Good morning.
So tell me a little bit more about these islands that are in dispute right now.
Well, they are remote and uninhabited islands in the East China Sea. China says that these islands have always belonged to China since ancient times. Japan says those islands were returned to Japan after the Second World War under a treaty, but China disputes that. And I guess another reason that I should mention is that those islands are believed to sit on huge potential natural gas and oil reserves.
Right. I've heard that there are just a lot of natural resources under these islands.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about it, and Japan's claim is that China has only started to make a fuss about the sovereignty of these islands in the 1970s when they started realizing that there might be all these natural resources. But I must say that when you speak with people on the street, they don't know much about these natural resources, and it seems like it's really more about people's feeling towards each other, especially coming from the bitter relationship that the two countries have during the Second World War.
Is there any idea of how this situation might be resolved?
I think both the Japanese government and the Chinese government might want to know the answer to that. This issue has been going on for many, many years, and we've seen very violent protests in China yesterday to today, reacting to the Japanese activists landing on the island. And in fact, the government of Tokyo, the controversial Tokyo mayor Shintaro Ishihara, said a few months ago that why don't we just buy those islands from this Japanese national? And he has since been collecting donations from the Japanese public. They're just individuals who donated a small amount of money from their own salaries or pocket money because they feel so passionately that these islands should be belonging to Japan.
The BBC's Marika Oi in Tokyo. Marika, thank you.
Thank you.
And Jeff, it's just about back to school season. Are you doing any back to school shopping for your kid?
I'm thinking about it. My son's going to be in pre-K this year, so I don't know what he needs. You need a calculator for that these days?
Probably. Back in my day, it was like crayons, but you probably do need like a graphing calculator now. But this year, too, kids' lunch choices are going to be a little bit different. And here's Marketplace's Adrienne Hill with more.
Public school cafeterias serve nearly 32 million kids every day, which, if you think about it, is a whole lot of pizzas. And now, under new federal guidelines, a whole lot more fruits and vegetables, which may require a little getting used to.
And people say, oh, kids won't eat fruits and vegetables. Well, the reason they don't eat it is because they don't know what it is. They've not seen it at home.
Dr. Janie Thornton is Deputy Undersecretary at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Under the new guidelines, kids have to take a fruit or a vegetable at lunch. Made-over menus also include more whole grains and healthier milk choices. But the change doesn't come cheap. David Binkel is Interim Director of Food Services for L.A. Schools.
Well, the new rules, we'll expect to see somewhere around a 12% increase in terms of the cost.
Nationwide, the veggier, fruitier, healthier menus are expected to cost an extra $3 billion over the next 5 years. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
To hear the politicians tell it, many of our hopes in this economic recovery rest with the American entrepreneur. Shark Tank on ABC is a reality show that lets you root for those entrepreneurs. So here's how it works, Stacey. Self-made wealthy investors sit up on these plush chairs in judgment. And over the course of an hour, they scrutinize a parade of pitches people bring to them. And the sharks, as you call them, decide basically whether they're going to send the person away, usually with a few insults about how stupid their idea is, and crush their dream. Or, this is where it gets really interesting, do they take a stake in the business with their own money?
Oh, it's like American Idol, except with business ideas.
American entrepreneurial idol, exactly.
Yes.
It's not a predictably sexy premise for reality TV, but Shark Tank is up for an Emmy right now, and the fourth season starts next month. From the start, the shark on the far right has been Canadian software mogul Robert Herjavec. He's known for kind of living large. He crashed his Ferrari on a racetrack earlier this spring. but he started very small and quite humble. He was a child of Croatian immigrants who arrived in Canada with basically nothing. Robert Herjavec, welcome to Marketplace.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
So Shark Tank's fourth season is coming up. And as you have sat in your investor's chair these past few years, hearing people bring ideas to you, what kind of a view does that give you of the changes in the economy?
What we know is that the economy is not getting that much better. Credit is still very, very difficult to get. We see great companies come on the show with real sales that can't get funding. But the stake for an American dream and that vision hasn't gone away.
The challenges that you see in the economy with people getting other forms of credit, does that make you more sympathetic or more wary of what you do with your own money?
I think that it makes me empathetic. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think one of the fallacies that people have is, you know, you need a lot of money to make a lot of money. When I started out, my dad was a blue-collar guy, and my mom was a receptionist. And everybody said to me, you can't make money without money. And that's absolutely not true. If you're a true entrepreneur, you're always going to find a way. Money is just another resource that you need in order to run a business. It's not the end goal.
Well, you tell people that if you want to succeed as an entrepreneur, you have to give yourself 100% to your business. And yet, some of the most painful moments on Shark Tank are when people have gone into enormous personal debt to fund an idea, and it's clear that without your support, they could be in serious trouble. How do you reconcile those two notions?
So the first thing is, that's business. Business is fluid. There is no static. So I think one of the great characteristics you need as an entrepreneur is adaptability. You've got to be 100% committed. You've got to be willing to put everything on the line. But at the same time, if it's a bad idea and it's not going anywhere and you've put everything on the line, it's a sure path to failure. I mean, when I started my first business, I got a second mortgage on the house. And if it didn't work, man, we were going to be in a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, it seemed like a reasonable risk. Today, I look back and I say, my gosh, I was an idiot.
The new season of Shark Tank starts in mid-September on ABC. Robert Herjavec, great to talk with you. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Jeff.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
Today, the apparel industry's largest trade show kicks off in Vegas. And this year, the mayor of Los Angeles will be there promoting a Made in LA campaign. Here's Marketplace's Jeff Tyler on the surprising rise of a new American clothes-making hub.
At this factory in downtown Los Angeles, large knitting machines transform yarn into fabric. What distinguishes this city from fashion hotspots like New York or Paris?
We're a great hub for the casual LA chic look.
Pat Tabassi is marketing manager for Design Knit, a textile manufacturer. She says the company considered relocating to Shanghai, but decided the move would add time to their production process.
It's really about efficiency, because everyone wants to get their goods out as quickly as possible.
Los Angeles specializes in what's known as fast fashion, style as set by celebrities. Ilsa Metchik is president of the California Fashion Association. She says L.A. designers have a moving target.
You have 10 weeks to define what's hot, and in 10 weeks, it's not.
Companies based here can jump on a trend before it goes out of style.
That's what we're all about, built-in obsolescence.
From the home of built-in obsolescence, I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
So, Jeff, what do you think of when you think of Memphis? Maybe like Elvis or...
Blues music? Absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, apparently the city is dealing with some major urban challenges, sort of along the lines of Detroit. And in reaction, Memphis has launched a PR campaign that is aimed in part at bringing former residents back to the city. From WPLN, Blake Farmer has that story.
A minute-long web ad has an uncanny resemblance to a popular Chrysler commercial about the Motor City. This spot describes Memphis as real and raw.
The stage is set. This is Memphis. This is the comeback.
The comeback campaign includes strategically placed billboards in nearby metropolitan areas like Little Rock, St. Louis, and Nashville. Memphis has been shrinking. Mary Casciola works in the mayor's office and says the campaign is meant to tap a deep-rooted Memphis loyalty.
The feeling is always like, well, I'm going to be back one day. And so this campaign asks, well, why not today?
Casciola points to the green shoots of a turnaround. Unemployment dropped below double digits. $1 billion in economic development was announced for the city last year. And on Broadway, Memphis the Musical won a Tony. The comeback campaign targets prospective tourists, as well as people like Youth Minister David Rubio. He moved his family to Nashville 7 years ago, and unlike some Memphis expats, he feels an unexplained draw to move back.
I will frequently have a conversation that goes something like this. Oh, you're from Memphis, and aren't you glad you got out of there? You know, isn't it great to be free?
Rubio bristles at the negative stereotypes, even if some are deserved. He cringes when Memphis ends up at the top of some horrible list like infant mortality rates. Will a PR campaign make the hometown pull irresistible?
I hope the comeback happens, even if it happens without me.
For now, Rubio says he'll be rooting for Memphis, but from 3 hours east. In Nashville, I'm Blake Farmer for Marketplace.
And as we wrap up here, Stacey, the Finnish cell phone maker Nokia, you've heard of Nokia, of course, talk about them a lot. Well, they haven't had such an easy time of it lately. They've been struggling for market share. But in Finland, at least, Nokia is still tops in at least one category. Distance. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. A teenager named Iiri Karjalainen, a great Finnish name, hurled his old Nokia handset 333 feet, and he won Finland's annual mobile phone throwing contest. Isn't it just so typical of, you know, sort of the home of the mobile phone that they would have?
Yeah, I feel like I've also thrown my phone 333 feet in moments of frustration.
Did it survive?
Yes, it did. My reception is not very good.
They are not meant to survive this contest. But for all of you out there, if you thought there was no use for your old flip phone, think again. You can throw it really far.
Oh, and finally, Jeff, for the soccer mom who has everything, there is a new minivan out from Lamborghini.
Oh, yeah.
A Lamborghini minivan. It's called the Urus. It is a 4-passenger car, 600 horsepower. So that is like, if you're late for soccer practice, you do not have to worry.
I'm going to stop you right there. What's a 4-passenger minivan? I think they have a challenge with defining as a minivan.
I think the seats, you know, from what I could see, the seats are not like a bench style. They're sort of, you know, like individual seat. You know, they have the sort of airplane cockpit thing.
So you won't be transporting the whole child's soccer team.
No, this is not Lamborghini's a let's pile minivan. Into the minivan minivan. This is a Lamborghini minivan. In fact, guess how much it costs? It is not cheap.
Lamborghinis. Yeah, Lamborghinis can be insane. $100,000?
It's actually more than $200,000.
Yep.
But that is the cheapest Lamborghini on the market. So
does it have those doors on the side that like flip up?
The gull wing doors. If it doesn't, that's just horrible. Like, from what I could see, no, it did not.
It is the cheapest Lamborghini on the market.
Yeah, you want the gull wing doors, you got to pay.
Somewhere. Well, in Los Angeles, I'm Jeff Horwich.
And in New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, and this is the Marketplace Midday Update.
From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.